Hello, and welcome back to the Dr. Karina Smith podcast. In today's episode, I'm interviewing good friend and fellow yin yoga teacher, Heidi Trigger. Heidi is an amazing teacher who brings a breadth of creativity and deep discoveries to her yin yoga teaching. And in this episode, we talk about her journey from dance to teaching yoga to teaching yin, and all of the ways in which she's bringing new experiences to her students and what she's offering in the yin yoga space right now. It's a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Let's get into it. Hello, Heidi.
Hi, Karina.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fabulous. Yeah. I'm really fabulous. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on and being a guest on my little show.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I don't know why it took me so long to invite you. For those of you listening and watching that may not have had the beautiful gift of spending time with Heidi in either one of her yoga classes or her retreats or her incredible kirtans and all the other yummy offerings that Heidi has to share, you're in for a real treat. This is a very special person. I'm particularly biased because she's a very good friend of mine, but I think you're going to really enjoy watching and listening to us hang out, I think.
I hope so too.
It's often quite nice to start hearing what your journey's been like. So you've taught all sorts of different things in terms of the yoga world. Tell us a bit about your backstory and how you came to yin and what your relationship is with yin yoga, and you can just take it from there.
Okay, so I come from a background in dance, actually, like I think a lot of yogis do. Just yoga, I guess asana was my pathway into yoga because it was real. Like I practiced yoga when I was younger, and then I had a big break from yoga, and then I got injured at dancing. So I couldn't jump anymore. So I went, while I was on my kind of healing process from the injury, to yoga, and then I fell back in love with it, but it was through asana. And then, you know, dance is so yang, such a yang movement style of the body. And then it was, I feel like, I don't really know the year, but I kind of guess it was like 2011 or 2012 when yin yoga came here to Australia. And I went to a class and I actually thought it was just the worst thing I'd ever done in my entire life. I was just like, what was that even about? Like, I don't even get it. And then I went back again, like maybe ages later, when a friend said, no, Heidi, you've actually got to use the props and surrender into the shape, and it's not strenuous. And I sort of had, then I had to shift my mindset about it a little bit. And then the next time I went back, I liked it. And then the more I went, I just started to fall in love with it because my body, I didn't realize, was just so tight from all of those years of dancing. And like all the stretches in dance are active stretches. There's nothing in dance that allows you to just soften into the shape. So when I discovered that that was happening, because I'm not flexible organically, like I'm not a flexible person, and it takes me a long time to, it's taken me all my life really to be, people look at me and think, oh, she's so flexible, but no, like if I didn't do what I do, I wouldn't be able to touch my toes or anything like that. And then as a dancer, I was one of the really inflexible ones, and I was kind of always a little bit jealous of everyone else that they could like kick really high and do the splits and do all those sort of things. And then now I feel I'm definitely the most flexible I've ever been in my life at 48. And it's because I've allowed my body to just absolutely soften instead of having to look a certain way. Yeah. But isn't that just yoga? It's like, it's my favorite thing about it. It's like, it doesn't have to be or look or feel like anyone else. It just is that, you know? So that's kind of, that was kind of my gateway in. And I didn't instantly fall in love with yin yoga. Like I know a lot of people do, I didn't. It took me a little bit of time to find my love for it. But then now it's like really, you know, my favorite now. I love it.
What do you love about it?
I love that, the fact that it softens my body as opposed to making it harder. Like it's, for instance, right, so if you think of dragonfly in yin, and then like it would be prasarita in like vinyasa or hatha style yoga, but in dance it's called second position, right? So you're sitting in second position on the floor, or dragonfly on the floor, and in dance it's like your feet have to be pointed, your knees have to be pointing up, and there's a certain way you come forward, sort of like you would in Mahamudra, I guess. So everything has to be flat back, flat tight. So I just couldn't ever get past a kind of that angle shape, like a, I don't know, what's that, a 45 degree angle shape, really. Now, if I'm hanging out in dragonfly for 5 minutes, I can, my head will touch the ground, and because everything's softer, and it's not so much about trying to externally rotate, it's more like of an internal rotation where it's just soft. It just allows my body to be there. I mean, let alone all of the other benefits it has, you know, on the meridian lines and all of the other things that happen for you when you're in there. But that, just that alone, it's kind of, you just can't buy that. You can't buy that energy. So amazing.
The anatomist in me is curious about whether or not those very particular alignment cues in Upavishtakonasana or second position that you were doing in ballet, that there might have been something going on structurally where the head of your femur, as it tries to be pushed out that way, was catching. And then in yin, where you're allowed to just let your leg bones roll where they naturally can roll because of the shape of your bones, the hamstrings were open enough to just let you come forward.
100%. And then, like, that whole thing, like, I never knew that there was different shaped heads of the body, like the hip joints were different. Like, I never knew that some people had really round plates and some people. So I just thought, I'm just not flexible, but maybe mine's like almost like a circle, and it just doesn't go any further than that. And that was like also mind blowing. I was like, oh my God, I'm free. Okay, this is just who I am. It's cool.
And how are people to know? I mean, it's not until I studied with Paul and he's done this incredible work of sharing all those bone pictures, which he asks people to continue sharing so that people can be educated. You can't see into the bones. And like you, I've come from a ballet background where, and I bet it's the same in gymnastics, I bet it's the same in other movement practices, because I've heard that it is, that there is this understanding that because you can't see the bones, everyone must have identical variation. And obviously that I'm something I'm very passionate about. But yeah, you're right. In yin, it's not about that. And therefore, what I'm hearing in you is that it actually gave you a pathway to access parts of your body that you thought you'd never be able to access because that was just your story. I'm just not flexible, or this is as far as I'll go, or this is as good as it will get. And
100%.
yeah.
And it's just, yeah, and it's so freeing to know that it's actually not because there's something wrong with me, it's just that that's normal, because no one is the same. Yeah, it was actually Paul Grilly's pictures that I like, that's what illuminated it for me, because I had no idea before he shared all of that stuff, which was just so amazing and life-changing for so many people.
So life-changing.
So amazing.
And if people that are listening and or watching are thinking, what are these bone pictures you're talking about? If you go to Paul Grilly's website, which I'm pretty sure is just Paul Grilly, Grilley.com, I'll put that in the show notes. There's a very clear tab on that website that's got a whole bunch of pictures of bone specimens side by side with a little brief description about what it is that you're looking at and how the differences in those bones will implicate certain planes of movement in the body. Not because someone's practiced more or less than another person, but just these are the facts of that body. And it shouldn't be seen as a criticism. It's who you are, and that can be celebrated rather than thought of as a shortcoming.
Yeah, and it's not just your hips, it's your shoulders and your neck and your knees and your ankles and every joint, your feet. I mean, in ballet, you know, you're meant to have that your feet, if you can point your foot, you know, in an extreme amount, then you have beautiful feet. But then some people just can't, because they have this part of their ankle that just won't do that. Especially I see it a lot in guys, a lot of men couldn't ever do that. And it's just, that's the way their bones are shaped in their body. And how amazing that we know that now. And it doesn't mean that they're any less of a dancer or any less of a person or any less flexible. They just don't have the bones that allow their body to look like that other person who has those bones. So crazy. Yeah. So amazing.
Oh, I have a couple of questions I want to ask you about what you've shared so far. And I want to make sure we come back and talk about the feet, because what you've just said, I think, will take us into a really good discussion. But I think when you said that some people fall in love with yin yoga straight away, but you didn't, I find that there is a big slice of people that are in that same camp that you were in that come to the yin class. It's very foreign. It doesn't really make sense. It's very different to the way they've moved before, and there's a massive resistance to it. But there's a big slice of that slice that end up falling in love with it. And I'm quite curious about what it is that enticed you to come back and give it another go and just see what it was about when it was, initially there was this feeling of, what the hell is this? This is not for me. What helped you to get in there?
Well, I think, you know, having someone else say that it wasn't about, it wasn't yang, like someone else described to me of, you know, their experience, actually, it was their experience of, you know, she sort of said, you know, no, Heidi, you've got to get the props and you've got to get the bolster and the blanket and the things. And then, you know, you're in the shape and then you can just stay there, but you can use all of that to support you. And then there was that. But then also on the side of that, I have to say, there was also another element of trust that it was yoga and that I trusted yoga. And there must be something in it if it's yoga as well, because although it's yin, it's yin yoga. It's still yoga. So that was also a part of me that I thought, you know, there must be something in it if it's yoga. So I'm going to try it again. And then I think also, look, to be honest, just like in everything, your teacher will also be a huge, if you have a relation, like if you have a connection to the teacher, or if you have a certain amount of trust that they can contain the space, especially if it's something like yin where, you know, you get to hang out there for a while, you're in a shape for a while, a long time, and it can be really uncomfortable in there. And if the teacher can hold that space for you as well, I think that also made a very big difference, because the teacher, the trust in trust. that you've got someone to hold the space for you, especially if you're new to the practice. You know, and I see that a lot as a teacher, like people coming to the class just going, oh my God, what, you know, it's a lot, you know, and everybody has different bodies. Like we were talking about before, there are so many of us that are inflexible and there are so in our bodies. And then there are a lot of people out there that have the opposite. They're super hypermobile and they also need the same amount of care in a way that they need to be propped as well. But that's another story. That's another discussion.
Yeah, I love that insight. And what I tend to find with people that have that massive resistance but do pursue it, whatever it is that inspires them to pursue it, they actually end up falling madly in love with it. What I hear sometimes from people is that they have this massive realization that there's been nowhere in their life before that they've had the space to be slow and quiet and mindful. And that initially was the thing that made them go, what is this? This is so foreign to me. I'm extraordinarily uncomfortable. I can't even explain why. I'm out of here. But the need, you know, like when your nervous system gets so wired and so sympathetic, trying to sit still feels really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Until it can begin to regulate, and then you sit still and go, oh, I can enjoy this now. I feel like something happens to people on that journey of falling in love with yin.
And it's in those moments where you actually surrender, when it's like, okay, I can just let myself go. It's okay. I've got, like, I'm supported, I'm held, everything is safe. And then you can let go. That's when the magic happens, I feel. That's when that's when yoga starts. That's when I let go. As soon as I let go, that's when the yoga begins, and that's when the journey happens, and that's when transformation happens.
Yes, yes. Something else that you shared about your history as a mover and how it's taken you like a long, consistent journey of caring for your tissues in a particular way for them to be supple. Do you feel like you're at a nice balance point where you've got openness and strength in your body? I know people always have this notion that yin yoga is dangerous and that it's going to sublax your joints or it's going to overstretch your ligaments. And I want to put a little footnote here that if you've ever had that thought crop into your mind, and it's a really normal thought to have, I really encourage you to go and take a listen to the Yogaland podcast that they did with Bernie Clark, because he speaks to that beautifully. Mm. But I'm just wondering, because you had a pretty intense dance schedule, and you danced for ages, and you were a dance teacher. Mm. What's it like to be in your body now, having come from a place that's been quite stiff and strong, like strong stability, to then have a bit more mobility in your connective tissue? What's it like?
Oh, it's so amazing. Like I said before, I never thought my body could do these things. I thought that my body was that's as far as it could get. Like, you know, I'd been dancing for a very long time, and it was still, you know, like I had a lot of mobility and I had a lot of flexibility. And I say that I couldn't kick, but I could kick high. Like I was kicking right up to my ear. So I was, you know, and I was in the splits and stuff, but it was still, there was like this, it was like my muscles did not have permission to let go, that there was like this energetic or maybe a subconscious thing happening in my mind saying to my muscles, don't let go, don't let go. And there was always a fear of injury as well. Like in the back of my head, I was like, always, okay, make sure that everything's strong and stable. And I think that was just a constant thought in the back of my mind, because, you know, with yoga, yoga means to unite, and we're uniting all of the parts of us. So it's not just the physical, it's the mental and the emotional stuff that goes along with yin yoga. And, you know, like how many times have I cried in yin yoga? Many. How many times have I cried on the mat? I don't know. I can't count anymore. I've lost count. But that's a release of all of the things, not just with the tears, but just with the limiting self-belief that if I don't do it this way that I've been conditioned to do it in my body. And this can just go to, and you can use this and insert that sentence in any part of my life, really. If I don't do this in a certain way that I've been conditioned to do it, then I will be hurt, injured, won't be able to do it anymore. And who knows what's going to happen. And there's a really honest fear of the unknown if I didn't do it that way. But yin yoga really allowed me to surrender my body to being how it needs to be. And you can also insert that sentence into other parts of my life as well. But because it really starts, you know, in this time in the world, in the Western world, in the way we live, in the outer layer, right, whether you want to call it Anamaya Kosha or whatever you want to call it, but I feel like the gateway in for me was definitely through the body, the matter, to get into the parts inside that were unseen and unknown and actually unconditioned. And once I got into the unconditioned parts and started to trust in myself, yoga, then I could really let go. And then now, because my body is so free from yin yoga, I feel like there's a much more beautiful balance within me. But then it's not just the body, it's like in every aspect of my life now. It's like the body is just kind of like a reflection or a mirror or just the outer layer of what's really happening inside, which is more softening, more flexibility, more trust, more surrender, a deeper knowing and less fear in the unknown of, I know now that I can really just let go and hang out in a shape for a long time. I'm not going to get injured and it's actually going to feel amazing, you know?
Wow. Wow. What a gift that pathway has been for the way you relate to your world. And
it's so great.
Yeah. Especially that last thing that you just said, because it sounded like if I color out of the lines in any way here, I'm in danger.
Yes. Yes.
And this practice of coming up to the moment of surrender and trusting my friend that said, babe, use the props.
Yeah.
That's what they're there for. Lean into some support. You don't have to do it all on your own. And a teacher that can hold the space and you go, all right, I'm going to let go here. I'm going to let go here. Oh, this is nice. I'm okay.
Yeah.
Oh, how does this, and probably consciously / unconsciously, that then became a way of feeling into different things in your life. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So great. How great's yoga? It's just great. It's the gift that keeps on giving. It's the best friend that never leaves your side. You know, it's just the best. So
yeah. Yeah. I haven't taught a flow class for a number of years now, and it's definitely bubbling around in there how I might reapproach teaching flow. And I know that you've taught a lot of flow and that's been more your mainstay than yin yoga. Correct me if that's wrong. To me, if I was to step back into that space, it would definitely be teaching flow in a yin way.
Yeah.
Which means bringing the idea of target areas to flow yoga, where instead of it being alignment based, it would be intention based. And for like an example of that, that I might give is that if people were coming into a backbend, for example, and the structural shape of their backbend meant that they always get a really painful pinch in their lumbar spine when they come into full wheel, that they could just do a different backbend.
Yep.
That it's not about the posture itself being this transformational thing that only exists in that posture, because in every single backbend, the spine's going to do almost identical to what it will do in another backbend, depending on how much force you put through it.
Mm-hmm.
And you teach flow and you're acutely aware of things like the pointed feet that we talked about before. I'm wondering how your revelations in yin yoga affect the way that you teach flow.
So what you said just now is how I teach flow. So
awesome.
I do exactly the same. It's the same with all of the things that I teach. So I know that everybody's body is different, and I might offer full wheel, but you could also do supported bridge or bridge, and it would be exactly the same target area, as you call it, because I teach like thematics for me is everything. I'm teaching every single class that I teach, flow, yin, workshops, kirtan, everything has an intention behind it. So like, okay, so if for instance I'm teaching a whole class on Ganesha, and it would be, you know, all about connecting to the earth and the space beneath you, and so then you'd think, okay, that's legs. Okay, so if for instance I was teaching a yin class, it might not be a meridian class if I was teaching a Ganesha class, for instance, but I might teach the earth element, and then in that there'd be a lot of, you know, legs, and maybe I'd do like a hip mandala or something, but then feet. But so, okay, so let's talk about if I was going to teach Paschimottanasana or caterpillar, right? So it's like the same shape. Mm-hmm. And everybody's in class and I'm teaching caterpillar, and then I get everyone into caterpillar with their bolster and everything and props and everything, whatever they want. And I give them like 6 different options of props and whatever they want to take and whatever they don't. If I'm teaching that same shape in a vinyasa class or flow class, I would offer up props. I would say also, now I often say, if you'd like to make this a more yin-like shape, you're welcome to soften it and make your, have a round spine and soft back and soft shoulders and arms. Look, to be honest, I feel like maybe a quarter of the class might do that. So there's a whole heap of people who still like that dynamic sensation in their body, and they're welcome to it. But again, we're still connecting to the same essence and energy. So because energy, although again, I said before that the body and movement was my way in, that's not, you know, after teaching yoga and teaching dance, because I taught dance for a long time, from teaching dance which is really quite, you know, trying to get everybody to look as similar as they possibly can and trying to get everybody have the same expression on their face kind of as they can as well at the same time. Whereas now we're coming from a place inside more so, coming from an intention of, okay, I would really, my intention is that everyone feels a sense of safety because it's a Ganesha class. Everybody feels like they're protected. If I was to say, you all have to look exactly the same and you have to do this shape, I don't think that I would be fulfilling my intention if I was to do that, you know? So it doesn't really matter now. I don't really mind if you do Paschimottanasana or Caterpillar. It won't affect your practice. In fact, it'll be better for your practice if you choose Caterpillar, if that's what you need in your body, right?
Yeah, and the conundrum is that absolute unison in a group of people moving is impossible anyway because the foundations of the bodies are different.
Here we come back again to the bone structures, right?
Yeah.
It's like, how can everybody have the same amount of external rotation when our hips are all different? We just can't. There's just no way. And then, going back to a kid, when I was a kid, we'd all be on the floor and we'd be in second position and dragonfly, and the teacher would go around and push us down and open our legs out, trying to get us all flat in a pancake. And I just couldn't. So I wasn't as good as everyone else because I just couldn't, because my bones wouldn't do that. So I always had this thought in my mind that I was just never good enough, and it's still there. Like, this is one of my limiting beliefs just from when I was a kid as a dancer, not having hips that just didn't have the right joint that looked the same as my best friend Kylie, you know what I mean? So, yes. So crazy, isn't it? Just so crazy.
It is so crazy. And there are two things I want to kind of add to that. One is I have the exact same belief that came from the exact same experiences. And two, the dance teachers that we had didn't know this about bones.
No.
Nobody illuminated this for me until I went to India and studied a teacher training there. And for the anatomy module, they just put on Paul Grilley's DVD. And at the time I thought, gosh, that's lazy. But I look back and think, that was genius.
Yeah.
I didn't get it at the time. I wrote all these notes. I didn't get it at the time. That material came back to me a handful more times before I really clicked and went, oh, I see what he's trying to do here. And that material is brilliant because he's got people from very opposite ends of the spectrum showing you the difference.
Yeah.
And I was studying at a university where we were looking at cadavers and in-depth anatomy, and nothing about the anatomy included variation. It was just the names of things and the pathways of things. And then where, you know, a vein runs here, these joints do this, these are their planes of motion, but nothing in there was about skeletal variation. And I've said that a lot to students. I've said, if you go and watch Paul Grilley's anatomy material, you'll be learning much better content than you would if you went and studied anatomy at a university level, straight up.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really life-changing. And especially as teachers, when you're looking at, you know, 30 or 20 or even 10 people and they all look completely different, and if you're not aware that they all have different bodies or different shaped bones, then to put them, try and get them all into the same shape is just for the detriment of everybody, including yourself. Mm-hmm. Wild. And it's so simple. Yeah. It's so simple.
It's simple, and it's completely earth shattering at the same time.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, and I'd love for you to share what you're exploring now, because it sounds like for you, it's definitely been the body is the entry, and now it's all this internal landscape, which is such a beautiful progression. And I know that in your yin offerings and in your yin teachings and the classes that you do are just, you know, things that you did in classes that I joined were just extraordinary in terms of the way you would frame a class, or the pathway that you might invite us to explore during a posture. I'd love for you to share with us what this deepening is that you're exploring now within.
So that's what's really exciting for me, because I didn't know how to do it. And no one ever taught me how to do it. And it was like something that I had to just figure out for myself, I guess. And I'm not saying that no one else does it, but I didn't, like, I'd never done, I'd done lot, I don't know, hundreds of yin classes with teachers who are really great. But I, there, no one had ever taught me what to say when people were in their shape. And whenever I did a yin class, I'd just get a lot of information about a meridian line or anatomy, really, or alignment. Okay, so, or what the target area was or something like that, which is great. But I started getting more interested in what would it be like if I was to connect a pranic energy, like a breathing into a particular meridian line. So what would that feel like? So I started practicing that, and then I started teaching it and watching how it changed the energy of the experience of the people who are in my classes and how they felt with it. So it was almost like I would, you know, depending on if it was a yin or a yang shape or a yin or a yang meridian line, to direct the breath up or direct the breath down. So it was like an apanavayu or a pranavayu, but with a meridian. So I was starting to connect all of the things that I'd learned in my tantra trainings and my vinyasa, sorry, that's my dog, my vinyasa trainings to the yin shapes. So because we're there for so long, like we're in shapes for sometimes 5 minutes, it gives you a really amazing opportunity to stay with the breath or with a practice, like a meditation practice or a directional practice of prana for a while, so that you can really connect to a practice that is deeper whilst you're also in a shape that is connecting to a meridian. So then there's an intention of, you know, lungs, say liver, which is like a detox practice, and then you can bring the energy up the outer seam of the leg at the same time as you're connecting to the outer seam of the leg, like maybe if you're in sleeping swan or something for a while. So then I started doing that, and then we can add things like color or mantra or sound or, I don't know, heaps of other different layers on top of that. Or maybe there's a layer of an element on top of that. We can layer water onto it, or a shape of the breath. You can count, and with the counts, you can then layer mantra into the counts instead of a 1, 2, 3, 4, an om 4 times or something like that. So then it even gets deeper and deeper again. And then when and how to layer that, then I had to explore that. So then, okay, so how can I connect the heart meridian to a heart based mantra and a practice of breath that opens up the heart space as well, and then connect that maybe with the heart chakra? So everything just gets more and more layered. So every time you're in a shape, there's a practice. So it's not just about, okay, your heart meridian line starts at the heart and then it goes up into the tip of the tongue or whatever like that, but it's literally like, okay, so I'm going, so how about you push the tip of your tongue to the top layer of the gums, and you like move your tongue across the gum. So it's not me telling you this is where your tongue ends, but it's you are having a sensation and experience of the tongue line in your own body without me even meaning to tell you that that's where your tongue meridian is. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a different, it's like, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of, that's a gateway in that was, I don't know, it kind of just organically happened, because that's with all of this. So I did my yin training with Sarah Powers, and she speaks to the meridians a lot, but she's beautiful, beautiful. And she's given us all of these texts and things to read and beautiful pathways, but I just couldn't match them up with the way that I was teaching and the way that yin yoga was for me. So although she's such a huge inspiration and I adore her and love her, and when I think about her, I even now just think about her and I feel held because she's so amazing. I still had to find my own way in. And of course, you know, you have to anyway, because otherwise it's kind of not authentic to who you are. But I did that over, I guess, the space of maybe 5 years it took for me to really figure it out.
Wow. And that speaks to me of the difference between just giving information as a teacher and reeling off information that someone has read or learnt about the pathway of a meridian and actually giving the students in the class the invitation to embody that information.
Yeah.
However it's received, because in those spaces and in yin yoga classes, the brainwaves change and you can really drop down from a cognitive place to a dreamy place and a imaginary place and a scope of an idea, like feeling into the tongue or the eyes or having you and your extraordinary voice chant in the room and let the chant flow through a meridian or something, because I know you do extraordinary work like that. It's also got the room for interpretation, and I think that that's really important, because sometimes people try and give a very strong practice to be done and it can feel rigid.
Yes. Yeah, it's an invitation. And it's totally unnecessary. And if you don't want to do any of it, and all you want to do is go to Shavasana for the whole 60 minutes, you're welcome. But then also I realized too that it's kind of a lot of these practices that I'm sharing and inviting people into can feel quite weird, I guess. They're weird because it's certainly not Western world culture practices. They're definitely Eastern practices, and particularly with the layering of mantra and the chanting that I do, which is certainly not pop music. And it's a completely different energy. But that is also weird. And I feel like, you know, maybe it's either you love it or you hate it, but you definitely don't have to do it either. And I also, like you said before, everybody's going to have their own experience of yoga. Everybody's going to have their own experience in the shape, in the practice. They're going to feel different. Everyone's sleeping swan experience will feel different, you know. And I think one of the greatest things that Sarah Powers taught me, and it took me a very long time to actually understand it and feel it and be it, is to be comfortable in other people's discomfort. And I think that's what the pressure was for me, because I was so uncomfortable watching people, like, you know, with different bodies to me, in a shape that I could tell they were really uncomfortable in, like saddle pose or even sleeping swan and stuff. And I'd be sitting there, I wasn't even doing the shape, and I'd be watching them sweating because I could see that they were just so uncomfortable in it. But I think then when I started to invite them to go deeper in and to surrender into their shape, which is what helped me to love yin yoga, to get to offer them a pathway inward so that it wasn't all about their physical experience. It was, they could go inward and have a pranic experience or a vibrational experience or an inner vision, so that they could get out of their head and more into what was happening in an experience for them that wasn't so painful or uncomfortable.
Wonderful.
Selfishly, I think that's probably what started to make me, or to help me to create this kind of method, was because I was selfishly uncomfortable watching everyone be uncomfortable. And that was what Sarah's teaching was. It was like, there are people that are going to be really uncomfortable in some shapes, and in the same shape there'll be someone sitting next to them that will be in pure bliss.
For instance, I
love saddle pose. I am in bliss in that shape. I love it so much. Give it to me every day. But I know that there are people who absolutely probably pray. They walk in and pray, please don't give me saddle pose in this class today. And they're in it. And they I don't know, I feel like if I'm in a shape that's uncomfortable for me, I know that if I'm breathing and if I'm following something else, it takes me out of my head and out of the discomfort into something internal that's more peaceful and harmonious, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, helping people get out of their own head and back into their body in a sense,
yeah.
Or changing, being able to shift their perspective about what's happening.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. The big one.
What I really love about what you're sharing that you're exploring in class, and I don't think it's selfish at all, because what we witness as teachers and what our students teach us informs us how to be better teachers, and then to recognize that there's probably a bunch of other yin teachers that might be going through the same sort of struggle, trying to figure out a way to develop a deeper method or a deeper way of holding space, because to be comfortable when someone else is not comfortable is, to me, the definition of holding space.
Yeah.
And just being okay with what happens for them, even if it's not what you think should happen.
Yeah.
Or not having any shoulds at all.
Yeah.
Which is a practice in itself. And you teach teachers, you offer trainings in helping people to develop more skills to go deeper into their yin teaching. And I really love that too, because sometimes I find yin teachers, for a period of time, and this is probably a rite of passage, they want to play it safe, but there's not a lot of people out there offering trainings, and you really develop this yourself, where they learn how to really utilize creativity. And yin yoga has so much scope for creativity, because the selection of postures is simple unless you do a lot of variations, and then it's massive.
Yeah.
But then how do you as a teacher find your own flavor of creating an environment or an immersion where people can go into deeper aspects of even their psychic self or their energetic self, their etheric self, if they feel comfortable to do so, rather than it be a bit dry and I'm just going to give you verbatim information about the liver organ, which is a bit too intellectual for my liking and doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah.
Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. Oh, that's what I, this is, so this is me. I could talk about this for about 5 days. I feel like, so if you think of yin as being, so let's just say basically there's only like 15 shapes, really. There's not that many. There's just an amount of shapes. I don't know. I just made up that number, but let's just say 15. Within those 15, like you said, you can have a million different variations with using props and variations with the legs and everything. So if you look at it in that way, you can also say that there is 15 different ways in, but within your scope of psychic ability or imagination or creativity, there are millions of different pathways. So I'm really just teaching the basics, saying, okay, so this is a pathway. Mantra is a pathway. The mantra Om, you can use the mantra Om to infuse into a particular meridian line, or you can infuse it into a chakra, or infuse it into a, I don't know, just your leg, or, you know, pranically, whatever you like. Now you take that away with you, and with your own unique creativity, go with it. How would you use Om in a practice? What if the whole theme of the practice was Om, and that's it, Om? How would you break that down, Om, in a million ways, which you can? How can you break Om in a million ways in your way, in your unique creative way, and infuse that into a practice? And give yourself permission to use it, and give yourself permission to do something that no one has ever done before. And that's exciting. That's exciting for me. You know, rocking up to a yoga class, any yoga class, and it's just different. And I feel something on a different level to just the asana, just the body. But I actually feel like I've left and something in me has shifted. Something in me has changed. And it might be subtle or it might be really significant, but I feel it. That's what I love. That's my intention as a teacher, and to teach these deeper practices is that to empower yoga teachers to walk away feeling like they have their power to create something that is beautiful and unique and new to them, that people will line up to come to their yin yoga classes because it's so extraordinary, and because every time they do their class, something shifts and they feel different when they leave. That's for it. Yeah.
What an exquisite intention.
Oh yeah. Sorry, that was my bell.
Okay. Perfect. You just punctuated that like, yes. Beautifully. Ding. Ding on the bell. Oh, and so while we're on that topic of teachers, and you teach teachers, do you have like a handful of tips or gems, or if you were speaking to audience members now that are teaching yin yoga, what advice would you give, or what would you share for them?
I think first of all that little gem that Sarah says is that to be comfortable in others' discomfort. I think that's probably, as a yin teacher, the most invaluable lesson I have ever learned. That's probably number one, and that's Sarah's, but I'm gonna just reiterate that and put an exclamation mark and an underline under that because it's so amazing. I also think to put the books away, forget about all of the books, and trust in your own knowing, your own inner knowing, and from what you've already learned and experienced as a yogi as well. I think it's really important for us to trust that we have everything within us that we need right now in this moment. And if you close the book, close your phone, close everything, close your eyes and tap into the energy of the room, and know that what you give them and what you invite them into will be absolutely perfect for what they need right now. They've come to you for a reason today, even if they don't know it, and even if you don't know it, you're all there in this space together because you all need to experience that one thing that you're just about to invite them in and hold the container for. Trust in it. Trust that it's going to be absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect for what you need and for what they need, and the words that come out of your mouth are going to be exactly right. I think that's a big one too, but I think that trust goes even a little bit deeper, and it goes to trust that if you make a mistake, that it's going to be, I just have to go, because the mistake thing is a hard thing as well. And it was a really challenging one for me because from a dance background, we weren't allowed to make them. So if we made a mistake, we'd get in big trouble. And, you know, like if you go to an audition and you make a mistake, you don't get in. And if you, you know, make enough mistakes, you're out completely. So it's a hard one, right? You know this too. It's really, really, you know, a hard one to get out of. But there's a goddess in yoga mythology named Saraswati. Now, she's the goddess of creativity. She's the goddess of the arts and poetry and sequencing yoga asana and thematics and everything in yoga, right? She asks us to be as uniquely us, you. She's asking you to be as uniquely you as you can be. And she loves mistakes. Because when we make a mistake, that is then creating something new. So imagine if you came along and did a yin training. We all did one together and we'd never done one before. And you and I were there and, you know, maybe 10 of our other friends. So there were 12 of us there and we all did a yin training. And the teacher said, now you're only ever allowed to teach this sequence in this way from now until the rest of time. So we went off and we did that. Then everyone else did as well. So no one else has ever done anything else. You're not allowed to use any different props. You're only allowed to do dragonfly this way, sleeping swan this way, caterpillar this way, and it has to look A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and that's it. First of all, we wouldn't be sitting here. Second, there wouldn't be the props. There wouldn't be the beautiful, you know, different pathways in, like so many, there are so many amazing teachers out there that have very geniusly discovered different ways to use props that just support in the most amazingly magnificent ways that I would never have come up with myself. So some of these ways to use props is so epic these days, it just blows my mind. Mercury retro
bag
with my head bag. That's not my bag. My bag is other things, but their bag is so amazing. I love their bag, and I borrow from their bag. Because I look at these different bodies again, here we are with their different bones, and I'm like, I wouldn't have ever thought to use a block in that way, but now I know I can do it. This person is loving their experience. So that's great. But Saraswati is asking us to change things up, make things look different, make a mistake so that from that mistake you go, oh, actually, I didn't do that the way that Karina Smith taught me how to do it. But now that I'm here doing it this way, it actually works better for Jane. So I'm going to give this to Jane from now on because Jane loves this. Or Heidi taught me that I have to do Om in this, I have to chant the mantra Om this way, but I did it this way today. And when I did it this way, it actually worked better. So I'm going to do this from now on. A mistake in my eyes can be something magnificent for somebody else. So I think we have to really let go of things being perfect and things being the way that we've been taught in a way. Look, we've got to understand that there are obviously basic boundaries and rules that we have to use in our as a teacher, of course. But beyond, within those boundaries and within those guidelines and rules, there is an infinite potential for magic to happen. And I feel like, you know, that magic only happens when we allow ourselves to make a mistake and be unique and beautifully who we are, beautifully you.
Yeah. Permission to explore.
Yeah.
Permission to explore. It makes me think of something that I heard Thomas Myers say once. He said, and this is just purely talking about the health of connective tissue and hydrating tissue from moving. He's like, every now and then, do your yoga practice badly, quote unquote. Like, be weird in the shapes. Don't be regimented in the dogma of the shapes, because there's certain parts of your tissue that are never getting any attention because you're always doing it exactly the same way.
I love that. I love that so much. You can just use that little sentence in anything. Every so often, breathe wrong. Every so often.
Yeah. Breathe badly.
Every so often, dance wrong. Every so often, walk weird.
Badly.
Yeah.
Well, just for you, and you can see if you've discovered something new or if it's, you know, keep exploring. Oh, so Heidi, how can people find out about what you're doing or get in contact with you if they want to connect?
I have a website. I'm okay at updating it, although I'm much better at updating my Instagram page. So that's probably the best way to find out what's happening. I'm kind of on that every couple of days and I'm adding new things, kirtans and workshops and trainings and classes and all sorts of little things.
Yeah, retreat. Heidi runs a lot of retreats as well.
Yep.
For those of you that are in Australia or want to come to Australia for one of Heidi's retreats. So we'll make sure we put all of those in the show notes as well. So if you want to, find out a little bit more about how you can come and experience one of Heidi's classes or come and take part in an immersion or all the other wonderful things that she's doing, we'll have that there for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for such a great conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure.
Oh, so great. I mean, we could do this every day anyway.
We could.
But we thought that people would enjoy us hanging out, and I feel confident that they have. So thank you so much, Heidi.
Thank you, beautiful. Love you.
And thank you so much. Love you. Thank you so much for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye for now.